Thank you for listening to the following Playboy Radio podcast. For more shows, behind-the-scenes content, and all access to Playboy Radio shows and on-demand library, please go to playboyradio.com and become a member. Thanks again for listening. Enjoy the show.
Playboyradio.com.
This is going to be a journey into getting better with women.
Meeting them, talking to them,
seducing them,
and in general, getting your sex and dating life handled. Head Games with Maya Jordan.
I'm here to help you get more beautiful women into your bed. Welcome to Head Games. This is Maya Jordan, your dedicated and cordial host. Here today to talk a little bit about intimacy and polyamory and all kinds of topical sex-related things with comedian Alan Finn, who is joining us as well. We've also got two tremendous sex coaches joining us. They're actually a couple that practices polyamory, and they will be with us in just a little bit. But before we get too far into things, let me just sound off about my most recent experience in the last month of getting through my breakup and becoming a total, well, not becoming, I already was, but really flexing my muscles as a whore and just fucking digging in. I mean, I've been just digging in, just devouring men, women, it all. We'll just say that, it all. I've been hitting the sex club, been hitting Tinder, and even, I mean, I became quite the Tinder phenom. I was on for about 6 days and had a bunch of successes just in terms of like fun dates, great time, found a really cool guy who was a ton of fun to hang out with. And we ended up like having sex 6 times in one night, something incredible like that. Yeah. And it had been a while since I had done an all-nighter. Yeah. You know, you get into a rut in your relationship and you're with somebody who's kind of like two pumps and he's done. And you're like, is this all there is to life? And then you get out there and you see that there's, oh, so much more to life, like men who can literally fuck all night. And I'm sure that there's something to me that brings it out in them, you know, when it's new and fresh and exciting. But that being said, it was a fucking blast. But here's where things got weird. Because things are always getting weird in my life. Here's where things got weird. The night that I was at the sex club and coming on to the Masters in Finance Colombian chick, who was so fucking sexy. She was a package deal. She came with this kind of older lawyer type who was like an older gentleman, and they were married. And so I started, you know, warming up to the idea of playing with them. And so I brought my friend Tim into the dynamic. And Tim is one of these guys that can literally fuck all night. And I thought, you know, Tim could be somewhat of a distraction. And then I could get her one-on-one and have my way with her, you know, right? So I'm so in the zone over this chick, just so in the zone over this chick that I meet this, who I later find out to be this fantastic guy. I meet this fantastic other guy and have no recollection of having met him. But he ends up fucking another chick about 6 feet away from where I'm getting it on with the Colombian and her husband and Tim, my friend. So it was, you know, a whole lot of action happening simultaneously. And that night was a blur. I woke up the next morning and had major reservations about the way that I had behaved the night before, but I kind of slept it off on the fact that I was getting over a huge breakup and had been with the same person for a long time and, you know, was feeling devastated. So kind of slept it off on that. End up getting on Match.com, which is actually tremendously fun if you've never done it. I recommend it. It's a fucking blast. Got on Match.com for literally 4 days, and in the span of 4 days, met this guy who was really attractive, really nice profile, really funny, interesting, had all of the really nice top-selling items in his profile, you know, that he was functional, that he was obviously not an alcoholic, that he was desirable to women, he was fit, he had a good job, all of those things he could kind of, like, you could tell were present in his profile. And we got to chatting, and he said, oh yeah, I've met you before. And I'm like, when the fuck did you meet me? I mean, I would know if I met you, right? He's like, no, I met you about a month ago. And I'm like, okay, all right. He must know my family, or, I mean, we live in a small town, relatively small town, you know, he must know somebody who knows me. No, he said, I met you a month ago and you were otherwise engaged. And when somebody says you were otherwise engaged, that kind of is like swinger speech. So I was thinking, oh shit, I'm really hoping that this guy, I didn't meet him at Princeton, which is the sex club that I go to, because I wouldn't remember meeting him at Princeton, because that was the night of the Colombian chick and her lawyer husband and Tim. And I don't remember anything that happened that night beyond going into the main room, getting on the mattresses, and just starting to have a rip-roaring fun time. So he said, I was thoroughly unimpressed with your male companionship. So then I was like, just totally in, because A, he can speak English. B, he is sexy as hell. And C, he's not afraid of me, which is so appealing. So I just kind of laughed it off and said, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. Yada, 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 yada. Took my leave. Then things get even more interesting. I go to Toledo to see my fuck buddy. And I'm coming back from Toledo. This is a fuck buddy that I've had for years. We get along quite well. It's just a good deal. Coming back from Toledo, I text the new guy, the sex club guy, the guy I met on Match, and say, yeah, I'm heading back from Toledo. He's like, well, what are you doing in Toledo? And I'm like, well, I'm going to see my fuck buddy. And he goes silent. He just goes absolutely silent. And then I get a text from him a couple hours later that is like, you know, you're obviously very fun and vivacious and you have a lot to offer and a lot going for you, but I think we want different things. And I'm like, what the fuck? Who is this guy and what is going on here? So I kind of tease it out of him that he's looking for something more serious. And, you know, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be opposed to that if it were the right person. So I stated that. And now Maya Jordan has a fucking boyfriend. So, yeah. He ended up saying, you know, it's really important that we not have sex right away so we can establish a relationship, which I thought was really sweet. He ended up coming over that night and fucking me on my ex's couch, which was fantastic, by the way. Yeah, so much for that. And then the following day, I went to his place for lunch and fucked the shit out of him then. And yeah, it was fantastic. And then he got on a plane and went to fucking France. So he's in fucking France right now doing God knows what for the next 2 weeks. And I'm in Ohio with my fucking vibrator. So I'm a little bitter. Can you tell? Can you tell? But before I get even more bitter, let's go into a couple Dear Mayas that came in this week. So our first Dear Maya that came in this week is from Alistair, and he's writing to us from the UK, which is awesome. That's fucking awesome. And basically, he's asking about the male G-spot, which is the prostate. And he emailed me a series of times, many, many times. And his latest email says, Maya, please remember to answer my question. My fucking G-spot is desperate for your answer. Okay, so Alistair, here's how it goes, okay? And I am literally lifting this information directly out of Charlie Glickman's book on prostate pleasure, which I highly recommend to anybody out there who's interested in getting more in depth about the prostate and what it can do for you. Basically, prostate stimulation can trigger an ejaculatory orgasm with or without simultaneous cock stimulation, okay? When prostate massage, leads to an ejaculatory orgasm without cock stimulation. It's sometimes referred to as milking the prostate. However, this term is also sometimes used to mean prostate massage generally, since massage stimulates the release of prostatic fluid. It's common for fluid to run from the tip of the cock, ranging from a few drops, to an abundant flow even without ejaculation. Isn't the penis fucking fascinating? It's just fucking fascinating. So it's worth noting that too much penis stimulation with prostate stimulation will make most men orgasm too quickly. So if you're looking to hold on, you don't want to do a whole lot of penis stimulation while you're stimulating the prostate. And if you're able to resist the impulse to ejaculate, you can linger in that pre-orgasmic feeling that you got going on. Prostate play can give you the feeling of impending orgasm for an extended period of time instead of just a few moments before ejaculation, as with a typical ejaculatory orgasm. So how do you do it? You can stimulate the prostate by reaching a short distance inside the body, about 3 to 4 inches anally, and pressing through the front wall. When first starting out, it's always a good idea to start solo for your first few tries. Even if your partner is experienced and skilled and knows what she's doing, it's always good to do it on your own just so you get comfortable with the new sensation in a sort of pressure-free environment. First step, you need to trim your nails. Trim those nails. Trim those babies. Second step, remember lubrication. The rectum does not self-lubricate, and without lube, penetration can be uncomfortable. Number three, relax your mind. Minimize distractions. Number four, breathe deeply. Number five, relax your body. A good way to get the ass to relax is to massage it or rim the asshole by licking it. So when you're ready to slip inside, go very slowly and gently. And this is after your girlfriend rims you or you massage it and all that good stuff. So you can apply some light pressure, but you shouldn't force your way in. And once inside, don't jump straight into movement. Let the ass adjust to being penetrated by holding still for a moment. Now, Charlie Glickman recommends that you get to know the anatomy of your body and the placement of the prostate first and foremost. So you want to experiment with slower, lighter touches. And then later on, once you've learned to feel your prostate, which is kind of like a little plum up inside your ass, about 3 to 4 inches on the front wall, you can see how it likes firmer, quicker strokes. For some men, the prostate feels good to the touch from the very first go. And with others, the prostate sensations may be very subtle in the beginning. So who knows where you are with your prostate, but that's how you do it. Okay, Alistair, chill out, man. I'll get to you when I get to you, okay? Chill out. It's going to be okay. Our next question is coming from Ahmed in Los Angeles. And his question is, my lover and I have major issues regarding having fantasies when we have sex. I can't do without it, but she hates it. What do you suggest? This is a great question. He goes on to say that basically he's having major issues with her around sexuality in general. He feels like this crazy, mad, horny animal, but she's really traditional. I had to fight for so many things. For example, it took me around 20 years to make her comfortable with sucking my dick. But recently, we only do her way in bed, and I just can't fight anymore. It's so helpful for me to have someone to share my sexual challenges with. I have so much to say. Yada, yada, yada. This is Ahmed. He's talking about his lady, their long-term relationship, and the fact that she's very traditional. So here's where I go with that. Women are supposed to enjoy sex, Ahmed, okay? They're supposed to enjoy sex and to feel free to experiment. If she's not able to express her needs, you might want to try some erotic literature, something that she can read on her own and see what turns her on. You could consider getting her a vibrator and encouraging her to play with it and see what works for her. Take a little trip to the sex shop, pick something out together that's small and unintimidating, like a little vibrating egg or something like that. If she still won't budge, I would try going to see a sex therapist or mental health therapist who specializes in sex. And then he goes on to respond that she doesn't like sex toys. She just likes a very basic fuck. And sex, to her, is just about making a bond and an emotional connection. But Ahmed, our friend, wants it to be fun, too. So that's when I refer him to the professional. I tell him to go see Dr. Limor Blockman, who is in Los Angeles, specifically Beverly Hills. She is fantastic and can address his issues one-on-one. Not like one-on-one, but in a clinical setting, one-on-one. So that's it for our Dear Mayas. Coming up in the show, we have the fantastic comedian Alan Finn joining us for our topical sex segment. We've also got the fabulous Patricia Johnson and Mark Michaels joining us, two fantastic sex coaches who specialize in tantra and are experts in polyamory and actually have quite interesting things to say to us. So stay tuned for that. Also coming up in the show, my favorite segment, You're Not Gonna Stick That In Me, Are You? Wherein I regale some of my more famous sexploits, or exploits, if you will, and give you the dish on what's delish. Is that cheesy enough for you? That's cheesy enough for me. I think we're gonna go to break.
Exclusive content. Beautiful women. The Playboy Radio Network.
The following is a recording of a Skype call. This is Maya Jordan with comedian Alan Finn joining us tonight via Skype. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm doing great. How are you, Maya?
I'm doing great, too. I know we briefly discussed the topic of pity fucks and how they had kind of been game changers for us. And I know you also wanted to talk about ways to kill the mood during sex. So
why do you think you're doing that?
I think I'm like codependently having sex. I think I like because I'm able to have so much sex now. And before I was in a relationship and I, you know, it was granted it was somewhat of an open relationship, but I had to be very discerning about who I chose to partner with. And now I don't have to be discerning at all. I can just have sex with people. So it's like I have this buildup reserve of people that I am now fucking that I feel like I should have fucked a while ago. And so I'm pity fucking them now. Does that make sense?
That's not the same as pity fucking.
But it like on top of that reserve, it's a pity fuck too, because I don't really want to have sex with them. I'm just having sex with them to have sex with them.
Yeah, they're more placeholders. They're either placeholders or it's unfinished business, you know?
Well, let me tell you what happened the other night, which was so incredibly fucked up. So I'm at the sex club and had this, you know, surprisingly interesting encounter with this gorgeous Colombian chick and her really nasty husband. But she was just fine, fine. And I pulled my friend Tim into it because he's like this animal. He can just like fuck forever. And I figured he could help like offset some of the weird chemistry with the husband. So everything was really cool. And we're kind of like decompressing from the encounter when my ex trainer walks in the room. And granted, this is like a sex club, so everybody's like fucking everywhere. My ex trainer walks in the room, and this is a guy that I broke up with because he was hitting on me while we were training, and that's just like goes against my principles. I know I'm like a complete whore, but I don't want to fuck my trainer. So he's in the room. He comes up, starts like approaching me, and starts going down on me. Like, and I feel just like totally weirded out by it. So I'm kind of waiting for everyone to kind of like part ways and leave because I wanted to have words with him. Like, hey, this isn't cool. And
you didn't push him away right immediately?
I didn't because, well, I'll tell you why. Because I was feeling really good because I had just had a really positive encounter. Mm-hmm. And then, like, it was like he was capitalizing on that. And I was also kind of wasted, too. So, I mean... So it was like the perfect storm. So I couldn't get this fucker away from me. And so then I'm like, oh God, now I'm going to have to fuck him because he went down on me in front of like a whole bunch of random people. So I take him into one of the little private rooms because I'm like, this is going to be, you know, whatever. And he gets on top of me and he starts going and he starts like almost like a grandfather, like leaning forward and leaning back and leaning forward and leaning back because he was afraid he was going to lose his erection. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was so bad. And then he loses his erection. So, I mean, it was just, it was so bad in so many ways. And I just.
A trainer. A guy who's in peak physical condition. He couldn't keep the erection.
I fucked him up.
What do you think? What do you think it was?
I think I fucked him up. I think like he just like mentally could not. He couldn't sustain it. You know, like he had whipped it out during a training session before to like show me the size of his massive cock, which big cocks are not anything to me. I mean, you know, you see a lot of big cocks in your day and it was just kind of like, yeah, you might have a big cock, but you may not know how to use it, you know?
Yeah. Like you say, you see a lot of big cocks in your day. I don't see a lot of big cocks in my day. I have a different day, Maya.
You do have a different day. That's a good thing.
I just see my cock, and that's pretty much my day. It's the only cock I usually end up seeing.
Well, I mean, it's like I saw the cock, so I knew it was of substantial size. And then when he couldn't get it up, it was like, but wait a second.
You made him nervous because he probably fantasized about it so much.
Right.
And now he finally had the opportunity and he choked. It was too much pressure.
It was totally too much. And I was pity fucking him on top of that. So it was like it just sucked.
I don't think I don't think you're going by the definition of pity fucking.
How do you define it?
Because pity fucking to me is what a girl would have done when I was in high school.
Okay.
Like, you know, to me, like when I was a total geek in high school and I was an outcast, a misfit. If a girl had fucked me back then, that would have been clearly a pity fuck. Because no one else wanted to have sex with me. I was desperate. I needed it so badly. I was such a mess of a person.
Oh, that like, is so you know, sad.
Yeah, that would have been a pity fuck. It was almost like, you know, like a Make-A-Wish.
Make-A-Wish Foundation?
Yeah, it was like almost like you did something for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. You know?
Well, I mean.
Pity fucking to me is like you are having sex with someone who is unfuckable or a virgin. Or there's something really wrong, like deeply, seriously wrong with the person. They are unattractive. You have to be – a pity fuck to me, you have to be several points above them.
Okay.
Like where they would – normally people would look at you and they'd be like, okay, what's up with this? Like this guy has to be – either like she's after his money or, you know, there's a huge discrepancy in rating.
Well, I mean, I get that. And I feel like that night was so depressing because I didn't fuck him, but the old guy who was with the really hot Colombian chick, you know, I didn't fuck him because I'm like, dude, I can't do it. I just can't do it. I mean, if you talk to me back in my prime, like when I was in my early 20s, you know, I had this killer line that was, many a splendid view is spoiled by old balls. Because it was like you would get into these gorgeous situations in life and mm-hmm. then you would be in them with these old balls. So I vowed never to have that experience later on because I didn't need to. And as I grew sexually and became more experimentatious, that's not even a fucking word, more experimental, it seemed like I didn't have to engage in some of those behaviors anymore. So when it came to this old guy, I'm like, no, I'm not going to fuck you. No.
I want to know what view is improved by old balls.
There isn't one.
There isn't one.
they just hang. Do you think that there's such a thing as a ball lift?
There is.
Is there really?
There is a ball tuck, yeah.
Awesome. I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day.
Yeah, I may have to get one. Because I could see it in my future. Because my balls, it's probably going to be the same thing that happens to women with huge natural breasts.
Yeah.
That start sagging.
Yeah.
Be the same thing. Because I, you know, and at least those women, they wear a bra. And I think a bra, I could be wrong about this. Because I've heard, I remember reading something where they said it's a myth. But I think a bra holds you up a little bit, right? It prevents gravity from having a full effect and making it sack as quickly as it would otherwise. But yeah, I think, you know, I have nothing holding up my balls. And so they're huge. I have big balls. And hey, It's only, I mean, I'm aging, thankfully, you know, I think I'm a late bloomer, so I'm okay right now.
Yeah.
But, God, I just hope when I hit the wall, my balls don't go with that.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, cause I have really big, I mean, it's, you know, they're ready. I would like a ball reduction actually.
Is there such a thing?
I don't think so. If I could do that, I'd be happy to do it.
There aren't nearly enough interventions for balls.
Well, I think part of it is you're not pure. You're not a real heterosexual woman. I think there's a big part of you that does not like men. And, you know, you're not. Are you attracted to the male form from head to toe?
Not from head to toe. No, I find parts of it really funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I can get down on it. Like, I can get down on the smell of men and, like, the ooh of men and, like, some of the cool little things that they do. I find them endearing. But not in the same way that I can just totally get down on a woman.
Yeah. I think that you're in a phase of your life where you like women more. I think, you know, if balls are just, well, how old was the guy?
The old guy, the one that inspired the ball phrase. Yeah. He was like seriously like in his 60s. And okay. I was like 21.
At what point do balls become old balls?
Old balls become really old when like you can see their silhouette and like it's That's just funny. Hanging. It's just there's nothing.
Is there an age, or you judge them by the actual hang, like what you said,
the hang
and the silhouette.
The hang. I mean, the colored pubes don't help either. But you know, yeah, the hang. It's the silhouette. Because this guy, he was like a white collar boxer. I know that's like really popular in New York for these like suits to get in a boxing ring and like pound their struggles out.
Yeah, the weekend warriors.
Yeah. And he wrote this book about white collar boxing. I'm totally going to be giving him away right now, but I don't fucking care. And it was so funny because he had this incredible place that was right across from Carnegie Hall that like basically looked right into Carnegie Hall. And it was a gorgeous view. And I remember waking up the following morning and looking at that beautiful view and then seeing his old naked body and his old naked balls framed in the window. And it was just, it was horrifying.
Yeah, I see. I wish, I'm of the mind that I want women to share everything with me. So if that's, if I'm grossing you out with my balls, if I'm ruining your view of Carnegie Hall or whatever you're looking at, let me know. I'll walk away from the window. Like, I'll put on some pants. I'd rather you tell me what I'm doing something that's turning you off, or some part of my body is turning you off, than you'd be like, ugh, like this is disgusting. I need to get out of this apartment.
I never want to be in this situation again.
Yeah.
So how do you, I mean, what are some ways that you have instantly ruined the mood during sex?
So, ways that I've ruined it. You know what? I started laughing during sex.
Okay.
I'll just something about the moment, like, or I'll think of a joke and I'll try to make it look like I'm not cracking up. And then I just start, you know, I have to look away. So that's one way. I'm okay, trying to think what other ways have I ruined it? I went through a phase in which I needed porn in the background.
Okay.
And it wasn't just like I'd put it on and we would get to it. I would have to pick out I was a fickle fucker. I would have to pick out the right porn. It had to be exactly perfect I would take forever. Like the girl would be naked. I'd be on top of her and be like, hang on, not yet. Let me find a good porn. And I'd spend like, you know, 20, 30 minutes trying to find just the right one to put in the background.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That gets in the way.
That's a mood killer where
yeah.
I'm overly reliant on porno.
Wow.
I think what else like ruin the mood? I have called a girl the wrong name once.
Okay. That's an easy mistake. I think everyone has done that at some point in their lives.
I think, you know, because I meet a lot of people. in a daily basis. And, you know, I don't even know what I'm saying half the time. I mean, cut me some slack. I'm not a person just working in his cubicle or, I'm meeting like just streams of people all the time. So I may get a name wrong. Big deal.
Oh, yeah, that's not a big deal. The other night I was.
Here's something that ruins the
what?
Mood. Here, I'll tell you what ruins the mood.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you something that happened to me recently. I was having sex with someone and this person has a dog. And the dog is not well trained, and he can't be. We can't shut him out. We can't. If we close the door, starts barking nonstop, loudly. The neighbors complain. It's a nightmare. Okay. So we have to keep the door open. And he has abandonment issues, so he has to be a part of everything. Even when we're having sex, he's like in the bed, and that's such a distraction. Such a movie. And then even then, he doesn't. I don't know what he thinks is happening. Because I know he doesn't think it's an attack. At this point, before like when I would like hug her, caress her, he thought maybe I'm attacking her. Or then I thought, all right, maybe he feels left out. He's not getting affection, right?
Okay.
Or something happened. I don't know. So that now we're having sex, and he starts licking the sole of my feet.
Oh, that's gross.
It's so gross. I couldn't continue. I could not continue. So then she goes, she gets him a bone. And here's the thing that gets him distracted. She gets a bone and she fills it with peanut butter.
Okay.
He has to lick it out and get all the peanut butter out. And then the thing that really, talking about the mood killer. So I'm going down on her.
Oh, God.
I'm eating her out while he's eating the bone out.
Oh, God.
The sounds you make are very similar.
Yeah, I'm just imagining.
We're both essentially doing the same thing here, you know? So that was incredibly distracting, a total mood killer. And then there are times, too, when I'm hyper aware. So I know when a girl is – there are times, I'll have sex with someone. I'm like, wow, she is drenched. She is just flowing like a river.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, she dries up. And I see it in her eyes, and I'm like, well, something happened. She must have thought of something. And so she, I could tell that she realized that I realized that she dried up. And then because she's drying up, I'm starting to go down a little bit,
Uh-huh.
So sometimes like that happens. I don't know. Are you hyper aware of the guy when you're having sex with him? Like if his erection is going down a little bit, can you tell?
Definitely. I can.
Really?
And it really matters to me like that. Whatever they're engaging in, that they really believe in it, So if they're like a shit talker and they're talking so much shit to you, it's crazy. They need to really believe in it and like just be grounded in that truth. But like the other night I was with this guy who was like trying to talk dirty, but he didn't quite believe it all.
Mm-hmm.
So it just came across as really flat and it didn't really work. He's like, did I give you permission to touch yourself? Don't do it, bitch. And that's the way he said it. And it's like really bad acting.
Yeah. You can't pretend to be a dom.
No.
You're really a dom or you're not. You can't really fake that. I love being the dom.
Do you really?
Love it. I cannot be submissive. I have to be the dom. I love I love spanking, grabbing the hair, really like fierce, aggressive fucking.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like a girl who gives me free rein. Like I feel like there should be like the bedroom or when the sex is on, anything goes. You can't get insulted or offended. It's like walking into a comedy club. If you're offended by anything that happens then, you're an asshole.
Well, I know that we keep coming back to this, but I don't mean to like beat a dead horse, but how did you really get your confidence going? I mean, I know that you found a great outlet in comedy and really kind of worked your way through it that way. But I mean, what was the tipping point for you, do you think?
My confidence when talking to women?
Yeah.
Comedy helped out a great deal because if you're on a stage in front of hundreds of people, right? there are times when I'm doing 5-6 shows a night in front of complete strangers, and I'm making them laugh. So it's that same sort of approach. You learn to center yourself and keep your nerves calm and just focus on the person and focus on the conversation and get in a zone. The comedy really, I recommend it to a lot of people. Get over your fear of public speaking, and that will help you with women. Take a public speaking class or just go to a local open mic. Go to an open mic in your neighborhood and learn how to talk to strangers, not just women, to strangers. That will help you a great deal. But talking to women, I mean, sometimes you're talking to a stranger and you may get nervous in the middle of it. It's not, it's not like you're always going to be confident in every single situation.
But it seems like you really figured out a way to kind of still your nerves and get to a place where your nerves aren't dictating the course of the conversation.
Yeah. To a certain extent, I have. It's because you also get to a point. It's age. It's I feel more confident now than I did before. I care less. You have to like it's the same rule applies for comedy. You have to not. It has to be the right amount of not caring. Not giving a shit. So you can't completely not give a shit, but you also can't care too much.
Yeah.
If you find that sweet spot, then it'll flow effortlessly.
Exclusive content. Beautiful women. The Playboy Radio Network.
The following is a recording of a Skype call. So this is Maya, and I'm here with Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson. They are the authors of a fantastic book called Partners in Passion, A Guide to Great Sex, Emotional Intimacy, and Long-Term Love. How are you folks doing today?
We're doing great.
We're doing really great. Today's my birthday, actually, so it's always fun.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yay. Well, that's a good little birthday present. You get to be on the radio.
Yeah. I love it.
Awesome. Well, I want to get to, the real core of the book, which is so powerful. You totally support my whole aim in life, which is that there is no concrete relationship style that's ideal for everybody. It's what you personally define as good for you. So I love how you both critique monogamy as a cultural default. I myself am totally non-monogamous and very, 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 very satisfied being so. So can you talk a little bit about the history of monogamy as a cultural institution?
Sure. I mean, we won't go through the whole history, but like go back maybe 60 years and we'll start there.
Right.
At that time, the expectation and still in sort of parts of conservative culture, it's the idea that you marry one person and you spend your entire life with that person and you're totally sexually focused on that other person and never do anything outside of the dyad. That sort of fell by the wayside going into the early 1960s when divorce became more common and we moved into having serial monogamy as the norm, which is you kind of, while you're with a person, you're exclusive.
What's interesting is that the scientific definition of monogamy is lifetime exclusivity with one single partner. That's a scientific definition, but we'll look around in nature and find very few animals actually fall into that category. So,
and there's more and more research on the ones that people kind of thought were that way, and it turns out that most of them cheat.
I think that can be true for most people too. So, in terms of non-monogamy, how do you balance your need for intimacy with your need for freedom successfully?
I think you arrange your priorities so that every action you do is fully aims toward fulfilling your primary bond or bonds. And if that's your main focus, you'll find that you establish deep roots of security and trust that allow for more and more explorations. If you neglect that, then things start to falter and feel out of keel.
So it's a very, very individual thing. And there are so many different ways of being in a in a non-monogamous or an unconventionally monogamous relationship even, that it really depends on the individual couple or multiple person configuration, what their agreements are and how they understand what they're doing. And we stress that whatever you do, the important thing is to be forthright, to be transparent, and to make agreements and abide by them until you renegotiate.
Can you talk a little bit about the agreement process and what goes into that?
What we advise people to do is to begin with a statement of purpose. So really be clear about why they're venturing into an unconventional style relationship and what the purpose of it is. So begin with why you feel so fulfilled with your relationship right now as it is and what you hope to encourage. What qualities are there and you want to enhance those and how you're going to keep those as cornerstones as exploring, as you explore other things.
And I think there's an assumption out there in the general population that if you're in a non-monogamous relationship, it's a sign that something is wrong. and we really encourage people not to feel like, oh, there's a lack in my relationship, so I need to go somewhere else. It's look at what the strengths are and then decide to venture out from there.
Yeah, what you find in most people who have really successful what we actually like to call designer relationships, is that they started because they were in a place of just immense fulfillment, that they felt their love and the vibrancy they were experiencing was not finite, and that it was just overflowing, and let's share it with more people.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
In fairness, though, I will say that we have met a handful of people who have decided to explore being non-monogamous at a time when their relationship was feeling stale or they were in a little bit of a crisis. And that can work for some people, even though the general advice is like, don't do that. So again, we really stress that individual circumstances are much more important than any kind of ground rules.
Awesome. So, I mean, in terms of the intimacy in your relationship, how can non-monogamy actually build intimacy instead of taking it away?
Well, people who explore, especially if they're going to be sexual explorers and joint sexual adventurers, talk about intimacy and sexuality far more than the general public. Oftentimes, I would say many couples get together, they sign a contract of marriage, fully expecting never to discuss sexuality again. So
they may not even agree what it means to be exclusive or monogamous.
Yeah, nothing. No one knows. No one knows what even how you define sex. So that's a topic that's neglected. It's through repeated explorations and conversations and examining not only how you are as a couple, but looking at how other couples behave. And that's how intimacy and trust is built, is that process.
And I think sometimes when things don't go so well, there can be a really great opportunity to discover more about each other and connect at a deeper level. There is research on BDSM, in fact, where they found that couples who are engaging in BDSM play and have a scene that doesn't go well actually still bond more deeply afterwards.
Yeah, they still feel more bonded. Yeah.
Wow, that is just stunning. Yeah. So in terms of your relationship, I mean, I know that the book is based upon personal experience as well as lots of research, lots of data, lots of information. What can you say that you folks have learned in terms of the course of your relationship and your practice of non-monogamy?
I think a practice, thinking of it as a practice, is very important. And that means making sexuality a priority. We put it on our to-do list. We think of it as something you want to keep alive and vibrant. So it is like going to the gym regularly. You want to keep that juices flowing. So make sure you are exploring regularly. Changes everything.
I think for me also what I've learned or what I've gained is a profound sense of trust in Patricia. And I've been in ostensibly monogamous relationships in the past. We've been together 15 or 16 years now. But prior to that, I was in relationships that were ostensibly monogamous. I felt a great deal of jealousy in many cases and often a lot of mistrust. And I think that when you're upfront with each other about what you're doing, when you're really in a joint adventure together,
and you're mutually purposeful about what and why you're doing,
then there's no there's a much, much deeper kind of trust, and there's no I've felt virtually no jealousy in our years together.
Oh, that's just awesome. I know a couple from the swinging community that is just, their relationship is just so standalone, vibrant, and pure in a way. And yet they're full swap swingers. So it kind of is baffling to a lot of outsiders. And yet at the same time, they've got such a unique bond that it is in many ways overflowing. And so it kind of trickles down to other people that they end up playing with.
Yeah, I mean, I think in ideal worlds, that's exactly what happens, and why some of the swinger communities are so tight, where they've been going to the same vacation resort for 5-10 years, because they've built this just wonderful, brilliant community that has, that feels all of that love overflowing.
And so again, the research is pretty limited in this area, but research that's been done on the swing community suggests that a significant majority of people in that community feel that opening their relationships has strengthened their connection. So it's, we're not just, you know, this isn't just anecdotal. There is research that supports it.
Nice. Yeah, I've always tried to back up my, you know, broad blanket statements with a little bit of research, because it helps to enlighten folks that this isn't just anecdotal. You know, this isn't just based upon personal experience. Monogamy does not work for everyone. It's not a cure-all for everyone. It's not a solution for everyone. So there need to be other options available to folks who are non-monogamous.
Yeah, and I would even go farther and say those who identify as monogamous, they think it behooves them to really explore and talk about other relating styles, so that they are for sure certain that they're landing on the relationship style that works for them. Otherwise, their unexamined relationships, their reflexive, their default relating, and some perhaps down the road, they might have some disruptions that they're blindsided by, because they didn't start out with that conversation and land on exactly, you know, what kind of monogamy works for them. I mean, it's all,
they haven't chosen it, you know, and so all of a sudden, one person expresses even a new desire, and all of a sudden it's a betrayal.
Right. So we've got a couple of questions that came in from our listeners who were so excited to be able to pop some questions to a polyamorous couple, and a couple who is so well versed in Tantra. So has anyone ever tried to steal you from each other? That was a question that came in.
No.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm thinking of somebody in some role play with a bandit mask on and coming running in and sneaking through the house.
No, that's never really been an issue. I mean, if anything, I think that people see us and they see how connected we are, and they're maybe a little bit intimidated by that.
We're not approached enough.
Nice. Well, that is something to aspire to for sure, because I think you folks really exemplify the fact that you can have an intimate, deep connection and still be non-monogamous. And I think that's just a beautiful thing.
Well, thanks. Yeah, we're pretty happy with it.
Yeah. To be honest, it's the only thing that would have worked for me. So,
yeah. Awesome. Well, here's another question that came in this week. Where do you guys find time for tantric sex? You know, the belief being that Tantra takes so much time, you know, based on that Sting quote that came out a couple of years ago.
Right. Well, he also said, you know, that some of that was dinner and a movie. But
yeah, I think this is one of the myths around Tantra that we like to dispel, is that it's Tantra equals time, and who has that kind of time and who can actually keep it up for 3 hours, you know, that kind of thing. And it's really not. Tantra is an internal shift. Oftentimes you don't even have to change how you are and your favorite way of being sexual, but you can practice Tantra with certain ideas and shifts in attitude. And that's where the power happens.
Yeah. I mean, the real real key and one of the reasons for all of this slowing down in sort of learning how to practice is about becoming aware and developing the ability to focus. And that's very important, but you can do that in a quickie too. It doesn't have to go on for hours and hours to have very present, very aware kind of interaction.
And there's a bit of science about prolonging intercourse or sexual play, not only intercourse, I'm going to be clear about that, any type of sexual play. And that's when your body is in high states of arousal, high states of arousal, it turns on a hormonal flood that is just good for the body. It's good for your soul. It's good for your emotions.
And it changes your consciousness.
It changes your consciousness. And generally, if people are willing to prolong their play for 30 minutes or so, they're going to start to enter that realm where that floodgate starts to open up. And that's where you're going to experience altered states of consciousness or that just wonderful orgasmic state, blissful state, and access it a little more at will. And be able to prolong it and learn skills to prolong that state.
Exclusive content. Beautiful women. The Playboy Radio Network.
And now for my favorite segment. You're not going to stick that in me, are you? Wherein I share some of my more famous exploits, or sexploits, if you will. This one is, well, it's more recent. I would say it happened 2 weeks ago. And this one involved a guy who I would consider to be a grown-ass man. And when I say grown-ass man, I mean that he doesn't partake in text games. You know, like when you're texting with somebody and you have to wait 21 minutes for them to respond. And you know that they have their phone on them the entire time. That's so fucking annoying. He doesn't play text games. He's a grown-ass man. He also asks you out for something beyond coffee. You know, he's a grown-ass man if he does that. Guys, hopefully you're taking notes on these, okay? We're talking dinner, a movie, something beyond a mere priming date like coffee. I know pickup artists coach men all the time on the art of the priming date, but it's horse shit, okay? The only time pickup artist shit works is when the woman is fantastically wasted. Otherwise, it just doesn't work, okay? It's not going to work on Maya Jordan. It's not going to work on my peers. It's not going to work on us, so come on, get with the program. Take her out for something other than coffee. Another way you know he's a grown-ass man, he doesn't agree with everything you say. So this guy wasn't agreeing with everything I said. I knew he was a grown-ass man. It seemed like a good connection. He was also quite polite to others, which was helpful. He asked me a lot of questions. He had a decent car. He drove like a Honda Accord. It was something like terribly normal. Terribly normal being a good thing. He also enjoyed his job, which was a good sign. He was physically active. He was noted to be on a basketball team and to do a couple of other sports. He had a number of close relationships in his life, like with his parents. He was quite close with them, which was adorable. And he was aware of world events and conscious politically. We had some conversations that were quite interesting. And on that first date, he kissed me on the cheek at the end of the date, which was just, well, it was really sweet. I mean, honestly. He kissed me on the cheek rather than reach down my pants to tell if I was a genetic female, you know? It was nice. I also felt like I knew where I stood with him, that things were going somewhere. And this was all at the end of the first date. I could tell all of this stuff was present. Now, that being said, I go ahead and agree to go out on a second date, thinking that it's going to be much like the first. Boy, was I wrong. Boy, was I wrong. We go to a nice restaurant, sit down, have a nice meal, and conversation is just stilted and boring, and I could tell that he was tired and just not really with it. And I could tell that he just really wasn't that into it, and I didn't really know why. And when it came time to part ways at the end of the night, after we had had extended conversation and gotten kind of bored with each other, he reached over to give me kind of a perfunctory kiss, I thought on the cheek, but it was actually turned out to be a kiss on the lips. And it was so dead fish, and I could smell the pork on his breath, that it was just like, oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, and this guy shelled it out. He shelled it out on the first date. He shelled it out on the second date. He was meeting all of my criteria for being a grown-ass man, and yet his breath stank. and he couldn't kiss. And quite frankly, if you can't kiss, you definitely can't fuck. So he didn't get in my pants that night, unfortunately for him. Isn't that sad? I mean, when you think that something's going so well and you have such a great first date, it's almost impossible to live up to your expectations on the second. I think we both got our hopes up so high that when we kind of came back down to earth, it was like, wow, I really don't have much in common with you. I mean, I know you meet all of my criteria supposedly, but I'm really not that attracted to you. That's a problem. I mean, if you really don't want to kiss somebody and you're just doing like a dead fish kiss, that's just weird. And I don't know whether it was because he was tired or because he was a homosexual or what was going on, but usually I get a more responsive kiss than that. Yeah, usually. Not all the time, though. Thank you so much for joining us for this week's show. Coming up next week, we have the fabulous comedian Alia Janine joining us. She's actually a former porn star and now a great comedian working in New York and LA doing her thing. So she's going to be joining us. We'll also have Alan back for his weekly segment, as well as more interesting shit to come. So join us.
Exclusive content. Beautiful women. The Playboy Radio Network.